Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if you missed Friday's job numbers, you missed that despite optimistic predictions from many economists, January saw very limited job growth in the United States. Payrolls expanded by just 36,000 jobs. They were expecting like 136,000, and that's fewer than were needed to keep pace with the growth of population. In other words, a net decline in real terms, depending on how you measure it. Other economic numbers were slightly more positive, but the overall reaction is that the economy underperformed again. But that's just in America. If you think 9% unemployment is rough, compare that to Tunisia or Egypt, where the unemployment rate is stuck in the teens and where one in four young people are in the ranks of the long-term unemployed. Peter Coy, the economics editor for Bloomberg Businessweek, is here to break down what January means, not just for the U.S. economy, but also to compare our employment situation with global trends of unemployment. Hi, Peter. Welcome back to WNYC.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me on.
Those two random examples, Tunisia and Egypt, where unemployment is stuck in the teens and where one in four young people are in the ranks of the long-term unemployed, do you think that had much to do with the revolutions that are taking place there now?
I really do. There's a youth bulge in the Middle East and North Africa. They have maybe the highest percentage of people in the 15 to 29-year-old age group that they've ever had. They've had a huge baby boom roughly 20 or so years ago, followed by a baby bust, actually. So this pig in the python is passed along to an older age group, sort of like we had the baby boom in the United States. But for now, people pouring into the labor market, and these economies simply aren't equipped to handle them. There's no place for them to go. If you had a healthy economy, this would be considered a demographic dividend. And we saw that in China, for example, the growth of the population led to the growth of the economy. But in these countries, you know, autocratic, sclerotic economies, all they end up with is unemployment and resentment. They have a sense of entitlement in a lot of these countries. If you've gotten a college degree in a place like Egypt, it's just expected, or has been expected for generations, that after that you get your sinecure, you get your job somewhere in the civil service. May not even pay that much, but at least you're part of the system. You're in the in crowd. Well, as they've attempted to cope with mounting competition around the world, they're holding back the growth of their public sector. Fewer jobs for them there, so they end up sitting at home, and this just breeds resentment, and it ends up exploding the way it's exploded now on Hosni Mubarak.
And you characterized it as Egypt and other countries with a large young population being at risk of a lost generation. But what could a country like Egypt do in the global economy to keep up with the degree mill of educated workers that it's producing?
You know, actually, the funny thing is that Mubarak had actually started doing some things right. He'd been in office for 30 years or so, but since around 2004, he put in a business-minded, reform-minded government that was doing some of the right things, and it was opening itself up to the world, getting more competitive. They had 7% growth a couple years in a row. Then when the global recession hit, they still got growth, although it fell to a little under 5. But, you know, that's pretty decent. It might be one of these light at the end of the tunnel things where the very improvements ended up backfiring because as Mubarak's finance minister pointed out to Businessweek a few years ago, in an economy such as Egypt's, when you do start getting an explosion of growth, the first fruits go to the rich and well plugged in. Later on, you hope that it will filter through the economy. More and more people will get jobs and so on. But you end up exacerbating inequality and resentment. You make matters in the short term worse.
I haven't seen anything that indicated whether the protesters in Egypt or Tunisia, to the extent that there is an economic element to this, are asking for any particular economic policies. You know, in this country,
We
see protests against government health care or for it or things like that. There, obviously, food and other prices are going way up. There's this unemployment that you talk about. But from what I've heard, the young people aren't calling on the Mubarak administration, you know, in addition to leave, to do something in particular with the economy. Is there an element of that that I'm missing?
No, I don't think you're missing anything. I think there's just such a generalized resentment that people aren't starting to, you know, get all university, you know, economics department about this and pick out, oh, well, if we reform the tax system, you know, it's just like, get the guy out of here.
Right.
And that's what happens, you know. It just, this resentment boils over and people stop thinking about the details. That'll have to be worked out when we start pick up the pieces from this. And I just hope that the outcome of the upheaval in Egypt is not some sort of regime that tries to buy the support of the people with policies that end up hurting them in the long term.
Peter Coy, economics editor for Bloomberg Businessweek, who's been writing about unemployment here and in Egypt and elsewhere. Paul Krugman's column in the New York Times today, Peter, is about how global food prices contributed to the ongoing protests. And he lays that, at least partially, at the feet of an ever-growing global middle class. Is that a paradox, that there could be a global middle class growth spurt while at the same time a global youth unemployment disaster?
It is a bit paradoxical. The big picture here is that the bulge is the in the youth, the their generation ahead of them is maybe doing better. And one of the sources of resentment is this feeling that the among 16 to 24-year-olds, the ones we're focusing on in this article, and it's in the U.S. as well, by the way, and it's in Europe. I don't want to focus just on Middle East and North Africa.
Uh-huh.
For example, we saw student protests in Oakland, California, almost a year ago, where they were protesting tuition hikes, and they blocked Interstate 80 in both directions for an hour. So, and we in Britain, you might recall pummeling the limousine of Prince Charles and Camilla, pitched battles in the streets of Paris. So this is a global problem. But to get back to your question, if you feel as though the people who are older than you are clinging on to all the good jobs, and then after that they're going to pop into retirement and start demanding lavish pensions, which they claim they're entitled to, but which you, the young, are going to bear the cost of, and you have a feeling that it's a Ponzi scheme and that when you get to retirement, you won't get similar benefits, you can see how that might start to get people a little mad.
Well, we leave it there with a lot to ponder for economies in this country, in the growth countries known as BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, in places like the Middle East, caught in between, and a little bit about the economic element of the upheaval that's taking place there with Peter Coy, economics editor for Bloomberg Businessweek. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC coming up next, with everybody talking about Ronald Reagan's 100th birthday and what it means. We're going to have a particular kind of call-in right now. For anybody who has ever considered yourself a Reagan Democrat, we know some of you are in our area. This, I guess, would be people of a certain age who were Democrats before Ronald Reagan came to prominence, who switched to being Reagan supporters during his administration. And some people say that the Reagan Democrat movement died with Obama. I'm not sure that's true. But if you ever have considered yourself a Reagan Democrat, call us right now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. A call in for anyone who ever considered yourself a Reagan Democrat. And we'll come back to Egypt a little later with the woman generally considered the leading feminist of Egypt on how good the revolution is for women. Stay with us.